Hey, welcome back to Well, That's Interesting, the Oh God, That Doesn't Sound Right edition. Today is episode 182, Galaxies with No Stars, and a new class of life has been found inside the human body. What a day. My friends, today is all about objects so faint, so scarce, they've gone unseen and unnoticed by the most powerful machines and the most powerful minds in astronomy and biology up until this year. From what we know, and even from what we know we don't know, their existence shouldn't be. These discoveries are so bizarre, there are now two brand new classifications for things like them. Just in case we find even more, which, if you're a longtime listener, you know will happen. In the first half of the show, imagine a typo that leads to a whole fucking new category of galaxies in the universe. That's what happened to Karen O'Neill, or Dr. Karen O, as I like to call her, of the Green Bank Observatory in West Virginia. She was going about her usual day of spying on what's called low surface brightness galaxies, and I'll explain that in a minute, when she entered some mistyped coordinates. What she saw through her telescope, or rather what she didn't see, is throwing nearly every term in astronomy into the air for revision. Terms like galaxy. What makes up a galaxy, really? And is there only one type of dark matter? Because it looks like there may be several, thanks to the object just discovered. So what the fuck is it, you may be asking? Well, we will get to it. Then after the break, from the terrifying expanse of the universe to the terrifying expanse that is the human body, yes, we are going inside your gut and mouth and focusing on the old microbiome, without whom you would not be you. I mean, everyone makes a big deal about the brain, and rightfully so, but the microbiome inside you is a big fucking deal. Literally big. Here's a fun fact from the National Institutes of Health. The human body contains trillions of microorganisms, outnumbering human cells by 10 to 1. Yes, and they make up about 1 to 3% of your body's mass. You are a jungle. And like jungles out in the world, researchers find new species in them every year. My friends, in the second half of the show, it's my honor to introduce not only a newly found resident of our bodies, but one that exists, to our knowledge, nowhere else. And there is nothing like it. A whole new classification of a living thing had to be made. So, congratulations to all around, to everyone. Yes, we will get to it. By the way, I'm Jill Chacha, and if this is your first time listening, welcome to the flock, my crowded business goose. To begin, we need to head on over to the first National Radio Observatory for Astronomy in the United States and the largest fully steerable radio telescope in the world. My friends, believe it or fucking not, we're on our way to West Virginia. Yes, I can see you're excited and you already have a question. Why? Why here specifically? Why not Hawaii or South America, where other telescopes are plopped high on a mountaintop? I asked that too. Well, it's here we'll find the Green Bank Observatory, and turns out it's located in this state for a pretty important reason. According to its website, greenbankobservatory.org, quote, nestled in the mountain ranges and farmland of West Virginia, within the National Quiet Zone, radio astronomers are listening to the remote whispers of the universe in order to discover answers to our most astounding astronomical questions. End quote. Okay. I get it now. And yes, my friends, you can hear a pin drop here. Or rather, radio waves coming in from hundreds of millions of miles away. This is what passionate astronomers do here day after day, including Karen O'Neill, aka Dr. Karen O, a senior scientist at the observatory whose recent project included surveying hydrogen gas in 350 low surface brightness galaxies, or LSBs. Okay, don't worry. I gave this a Google too, because I have no idea what those were. Turns out, LSBs are galaxies that are extremely diffuse, or really, really fucking really spread out, making their surface brightness, when viewed from our little Earth, at least one magnitude lower than the ambient night sky. It's like having a dim flashlight in a bright room. Sorry, delete that. It's like having a dim flashlight in a big room instead of a spotlight like other galaxies. So long story short, they are hard to spot, but it's worth it. Quote, "The diffuse nature of LSB galaxies often challenges existing theories of star and galaxy formation. Learning about their properties sheds light on the formation and evolution of all stars and galaxies, including our own Milky Way." End quote from the Green Bank Observatory website. So, these faint fuckers are truly important. And like I said, they're hard to find. So difficult, in fact, you need more than just the Green Bank Observatory Telescope, or the GBT, to find them. Carano and the gang also use what's called the Arecibo Telescope and the Nansei Radio Telescope to make readings. On one fine day, while checking out a discrepancy between the data from the Nansei Radio Telescope and the Green Bank Telescope, Dr. Carano discovered what was the problem. Quote, "The GBT was accidentally pointed to the wrong coordinates and found this object. It's a galaxy made only out of gas. It has no visible stars. I mean, stars could be there. We just can't see them." End quote. She told greenbankobservatory.org. Yeah, my friends, a typo led to one of the most bizarre discoveries in recent astrological memory. Galaxies so diffuse, so dim, they make LSBs look like a fucking beacon. They've simply been dubbed dark galaxies. But don't let the simple name fool you. These dark galaxies are gonna shake things up. We will get into it. Put a pin in it. Now, before we do, let's get more acquainted with our new friend that Dr. Carano found. Named J0613+52, is about 270 million light years away and is composed of 2 billion solar masses worth of primordial hydrogen, which was probably produced in the Big Bang. It's just a big ball of gas out there. But this galaxy, flush with that star fuel, aka hydrogen, it's not forming any stars. It may be because all that gas is too scattered to clump together into heavier and heavier clouds, which eventually condense into said stars. Not only that, it's pretty isolated too, which means there are no galaxies nearby with a helpful gravitational pull that could trigger clumping, if I may be so poetic. In any case, bust out another pin and put it right here. Just a big ball of gas out in the middle of nowhere. So, in sum, our new friend is a galaxy with a mass and a rotation, by the way, very much like our own Milky Way, but has no stars, as far as we know. This makes J0613+52 extremely special. But of course, it's not alone. Yes, there is another dark galaxy out there, one not as extreme, but it comes damn close. My friends, get this. Because the universe is funny like that, in the same goddamn week, Dr. Carano held a news conference about this galaxy at a beads and boobs-filled meeting of the American Astronomical Society in New Orleans on January 8th. Astronomers, led by Maria Montes, a research fellow at the Canary Islands Institute of Astrophysics, discovered another nearly starless galaxy. They lovingly call this one NOBE. And it isn't an acronym, it's Spanish for cloud. And it got the name thanks to, quote, the 5-year-old daughter of one of the researchers in the group, and is due to the diffuse appearance of the object. Its surface brightness is so faint that it had passed unnoticed in previous nearby surveys of this part of the sky. Because its stars are so spread out in such a large volume, Nobe was almost undetectable. End quote. From fizz.org. So, how weird is Nobe exactly? Well, Nobe is considered a dwarf galaxy, which is adorable, and just like it sounds, it's a small galaxy composed of only about 1,000 to several billion stars, which is only a handful in galaxy terms. And it sounds pretty average so far, right? Well, it's 10 times fainter than others of its type, yet somehow also 10 times more extended than other galaxies with a comparable number of stars. In a statement released by Dr. Maria, quote, "With our present knowledge, we do not understand how a galaxy with such extreme characteristics can exist," end quote. So yes, my glowing business goose, that's the question. How? How is it possible for dark galaxies to exist in a universe where countless billions of bright galaxies are the norm? Well, hold onto your earthbound cheeks. It's gonna get fucked up. Good news, most of the universe is composed of stuff we don't see, and that we can't see. Every galaxy you've looked at in photos is a galaxy enveloped in what's called dark matter, which, get this, very much outweighs the ordinary old atomic matter that you, me, your dog, and the stars are made of by 6 to 1. And even better news, no one knows what it is exactly. No. But its existence is paramount to our existence. Its gravity is what pulls ordinary old atomic matter into clouds that become stars and galaxies. And now, I know what you're thinking. If there is so much dark matter, 6 to 1, why the fuck are there at least 2 diffuse as fuck dark galaxies out there then? Well, it's time to unpin those 2 pins. My friends, for the past 40 goddamn years, astronomers believed that dark matter consists of hypothetical exotic particles called weakly interacting massive particles, or WIMPs. They are invisible, they're slow, and they can only be detected through their gravitational effect on other objects. When running computer simulations, these WIMPs, which are a part of the cold dark matter theory, underline that, well, they reproduce what we see in the universe, like galaxies and galaxy clusters. Everything is wrapped up in a neat little package. But, and big but here, quote, "In computer simulations of smaller scale structures, this model, the cold dark matter model, breaks down. In dwarf galaxies, for instance, such dark matter should result in higher central concentrations of stars than actually observed. Moreover, particle physicists have failed to produce or detect any of these hypothesized particles in a lab." End quote. From Dennis Overby of the New York Times. Well, because of these breakdowns, and researchers left with their hands empty, some astronomers are like, maybe, just maybe, hear me out, there's alternative types of dark matter. Yeah, okay. Fuzzy or warm dark matter, for example, composed of hypothetical ultralight particles called axions. Yeah, this has been introduced. Some astronomers go as far as suggesting a whole ass dark sector of invisible particles may be out there, and we need to create a whole catalog. It sounds fucking bonkers, doesn't it? But thanks to these dark galaxies, these hypothetical alternative types of dark matter may be on the right track. Jeremiah P. Ostreicher, an expert on galaxy formation and evolution at Columbia University, told the New York Times, you could actually see the shape of the dark matter halo that underlines Nobe. And the shape, by the way, has been described as everything from a banana, a cigar, to a surfboard. And I'm just going to describe it as a good time. So head on over to our social media stuffs and tap on today's post. Whatever you want to describe it as, it's incompatible with the predicted behavior of cold dark matter. It's more in line with fuzzy dark matter. What the fuck does that mean? Great question. Okay, I looked into it. This is what I could figure out. Okay, in ye old cold dark matter models, there should be more stars at the center of a galaxy and progressively fewer towards the edges. But, as Jeremiah noted, with other types of dark matter, like the fuzzy one, stars could clump differently, resulting in a more even distribution of starlight through a galaxy. So, just when you thought things couldn't get any more fucking complicated out there in space, it's possible. Not even dark matter is simply dark. It could be cold, warm, or fuzzy, or God knows what else. We're gonna find out eventually. J0613+52, Nobe, and galaxies like them will help test each theory. God, I'm just glad the Milky Way was able to clump. After the break, the uncertainties don't stop at space. That's right, even more mysteries are abound, and guess what? We don't even have to go anywhere. The next stop is your body. And mine. And everyone else you know. So please, stay tuned.
Wherever there are rules, there is someone going astray. Sex, sleaze, and shady power moves, it's a story as old as time. I'm Kiki Anderson. As a comedian and former journalist, not a lot surprises me anymore. But as we stumble through a doomed world in a digital hellscape, it can drive you crazy trying to make sense of what is and isn't kosher. On Indecent, I'm peeling at the wallpaper of polite society to understand the why and the who behind our taboos. Come along for the ride as I explore everything from porn to politics, tech, and religion.
If you can't get through the day without, you know, rubbing one out in the bathroom stall at the office, you got a problem.
There's a big community around people trying to trade tips and, like, tricks on how to suck your own and like just many different pages of threads about this. And then people kind of create like friendships through this.
Subscribe, rate, and review Indecent with Kiki Anderson on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Also go to ncpodcast.com/indecent to learn more. Indecent with Kiki Anderson, where NSFW meets LMAO.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're back. We are so back. And my friends, I ask, have you thanked your microbiome today? If you haven't, you really should, because from snout to tail, inside and out, you are smothered in 10 to 100 trillion symbiotic microbial cells that consist of everything from bacteria, fungi, protozoa, and viruses that help keep you alive. Now, if 10 to 100 trillion cells sounds like a lot, it is. To put that amount into context, that number can weigh up to 5 pounds. Yeah, you have more friends than you can count. And according to the University of Washington, these friends, quote, help digest our food, regulate our immune system, protect against other bacteria that cause disease, and produce vitamins, including vitamin B, B12, thiamine and riboflavin, and vitamin K, which is needed for blood coagulation. End quote. So, it's important, to say the least, and a universe in and of itself. And as we've just heard in the first half of the show, just like our universe, the more you look, the more weird shit you find. As so beautifully summed up by Mark Pfeiffer, a cell and developmental biologist at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, quote, it's insane. The more we look, the more crazy things we see, end quote. Mark made this comment to science.org, and he was referencing a brand new study that discovered a brand new, never before seen in anything, creature. Hell, I don't even know if I can even call it a creature. In fact, biologists still need to figure that out. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's begin. To begin, I need to explain a thing called viroids, discovered in the early 20th century. Say it with me now, viroids. Once upon a time, plant pathologists came across these viroids, which are basically an infectious loop of RNA without the typical protein shell of viruses. So you can say viroids are simpler, earlier versions of viruses, who also can only replicate when inside a host, and their genetic material, either DNA or RNA, is surrounded by a protective coat, a shell called a capsid, which is made of protein. Fun fact, as reported by Elizabeth Panisi of science.org, quote, more than 200 viruses, including those that cause the flu, Ebola, COVID-19, bypass DNA, having genomes composed of only RNA. Their genomes include sequences encoding the proteins that make up a viral shell and ribozymes, nailed it, or enzymes that let a virus copy its original RNA once inside a cell, end quote. So these are clever little sons of bitches. And there you have it, the similarities and differences between viroids and viruses. And you may be asking why in the hell we're talking about that. Well, I've got you. Viroids were once thought to be only found in plants, but there's been recent evidence of viroid-like circular-shaped RNA genomes popping up in databases of sequences belonging to animals and bacteria. Well, what a coincidence. We are animals, and boy howdy, we have bacteria. A lot of it. All of this got Stanford biologist Andrew Fire, his graduate student Ivan Zeluvidev, and their colleagues a-thinking. Can circular RNA-wielding viroids possibly be found inside us? Well, my friends, the phrase needle in a haystack doesn't even begin to describe what a journey, what a challenge this would be. So, like any good modern researcher and human, Fire and the gang left it to AI. To answer this question, the team, quote, developed sophisticated software to analyze existing catalogs of active genes from microbes that live in humans for RNA sequences predicted to form circles, the physical structure of the genetic material in both viruses and viroids. I am really impressed by the approach, says computational biologist Simon Rowe of the DOE Joint Genome Institute at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, who worked on a 2023 paper that hinted bacteria might contain viroids or similar entities. The authors, he said, are really creative, end quote, from science.org. Well, my flooded business goose, the catalogs this software scanned included microbes found inside humans, located on every fucking continent, and totaled over 5 million databases. So, did they find anything? Hold on to your bustling cheeks. They found 30,000 new things. Yes, you heard me. 30,000. And these things had something in common. Their external shape is rod-like. So Fire and the gang named them obelisks, which are tapered monolithic pillars, kind of like the Washington Monument. Their genomes are only about 1,000 bases long, consisting of RNA, and they have no shell. So, here we are, my friends, these obelisk-shaped things inside bacteria, which are inside us, who aren't viruses exactly, because RNA viruses typically have many more bases than that, but they're not quite viroids either. I mean, sure, they don't have a shell, but some of the obelisks had genes encoding a novel protein called obelins, which researchers suspect may be involved in RNA replication. Long story short, viroids aren't supposed to have this protein. So my friends, no big deal, but these obelisks contain characteristics unlike anything else discovered so far. And because obelisks seem to fall somewhere between viroids and viruses, they could be a missing link of sorts. Yeah, get this, quote, "One big question is whether viruses evolved from increasingly complex viroids and obelisks, or emerged first and then degenerated into these simpler structures. This is one of the most exciting parts of being in this field right now," said Simon Rowe to science.org. Sorry, I just thought it was funny that this is exciting. Continuing his quote, "With this, we can see the picture of the long-term evolution of viruses on Earth start to slowly emerge," end quote. He's having the goddamn time of his life. Congratulations, Simon. Now, I think I could hear your thoughts, my complex business goose. You may be thinking, great, I am full of missing links. That's wonderful. But you said there's 30,000 different ones. Wow, where are they? And what the fuck do they do? Oh, great questions. Thank you for bringing that up. Good news. Obelisks were found in 7% of the analyzed stool samples, so they're in your colon and anus, probably. Hello. A whopping 50% of oral samples contained obelisks. One particular type really loves hanging out in a microbiome called Streptococcus sanguinis. Sanguinis. Which is basically inside our mouths right now. These obelisks have an RNA loop of over 1,100 nucleotides long, so it looks like the larger ones like to party in our mouths. what the fuck are they doing there? Inside Streptococcus sanguinis and inside the microbes in our butts? Well, we don't know. We don't know what their purpose is, what they cause, what they affect. We just know these brand new, never before seen cells are within us. Or within the bacteria within us. It's the whole turducken thing. We don't know what they do. So, again, watch this space. Thank you for listening, rating, subscribing, telling your friends about the gigantic gas galaxies out in space with no stars and how there could be different types of dark matter. You'll sound insane, but, you know, not as insane as the new class of life found in your butt. Sorry. And a microbiome-sized thanks to the folks over at Airwave Media, the podcast network to which WTI belongs, if you love this show, and you do, you love the other podcasts in this family. And please, stay interesting.